Welcome to C2Y Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care. I'm Wolfgang Vascho. Today, we're talking about boundaries. Most people I know who decide to work with children and youth like spending time with young people. Child and youth care practitioners tend to be a kind, loving, compassionate group of people. All of these characteristics contribute to us developing healthy, happy, helping relationships. However, they also put us at risk of developing unhealthy, unhappy, unhelpful relationships. Today, I'm going to speak with Dr. Pamela Richmond on how practitioners can have healthy, boundaried relationships with those we work with. Dr. Richmond is an associate professor at Colorado State University, Pueblo, where she teaches introductory and practice courses in the social work program. She's worked with youth in residential treatment, group homes, prevention, and psychiatric settings, so she knows of what she speaks. And she's also published and presented on the topic of boundaries in professional relationships. Welcome, Dr. Richmond.
Thank you very much.
I would like to start with the idea of boundaries as roots to relationship. How can we construct boundaries when we work with people and think of them not strictly as rules to be adhered to, but rather as ways to allow connection?
I think that that is a wonderful question, and unfortunately, there is not a simple answer. I think before responding to that, it may be important to talk a little bit about the definitions of boundaries.
Sounds great.
There are boundary violations, and there is a social work ethicist named Frederick Reimer. And he explains boundary violations to be an exploitation of clients, a manipulation, being coercive. So certainly when we're looking at boundary violations in relation to our work with young people, we do want there to be rules around that. For example, in the Code of Ethics, the Youth Work Code of Ethics, it states that there should be no sexual interaction with clients or clients' family members.
We're really seeing boundaries here as a way to support or protect the young people we work with, at least when we talk about boundary violations.
Correct. And so, therefore, we want some of those rules to be in place to protect the young person. But I think most of what we deal with in youth work is the boundary crossings. And boundary crossings are the gray areas that we face on a daily basis, where, again, according to Dr. Reimer, we're not intending to manipulate or exploit clients. But there are things that come up in our professional capacity that make us take pause. So, for example, do we tell a young person that we love them when they tell us that they love us? Do we disclose personal information? Do we give gifts? Do we accept gifts from young people? I think we are mostly stuck in the crossing area. And when we go back to your question about constructing boundaries within healthy relationships, what we need to keep in mind is that boundaries are a guideline, that they should be permeable, and they should move depending upon the age of the client, the setting that the client is in, based on their treatment issues. So all of those should be taken into consideration when we decide to set these parameters.
I can clearly see why it's not healthy to sleep with clients, and I don't think any of our listeners would have an issue with that. When it comes to, though, the boundary crossings, and I really appreciate you saying that it needs to be permeable, what's wrong with telling a client, I love you, and you're doing great work, and way to go, and what's wrong with hugging a five-year-old who has scraped their knee? Why are those things potential boundary crossings?
Well, I think what we always have to keep in mind is that we are the professional. And so the relationship, given that we are the professional and we are working with a young person for whatever reason it might be, whether they are inpatient, whether we're working in a prevention program, a gang task force, the bottom line is we are the professional that is bringing in an expertise in a certain area. And therefore, the relationship is always going to be uneven. There's always going to be a power differential. That's why we have to be cognizant of the decisions that we make. You were absolutely right when you were kind of introducing the topic at the beginning, and you said that youth workers and child care workers are just compassionate people that want to help. And that is absolutely true. And so often when boundaries are crossed, it is not because someone is intending to harm a child or to cause discomfort. It's because they were trying to do the right thing. But given what has gone on in the child's past or in their family structure or cultural considerations, a child and youth care worker has to be able to think through their actions and not just react a knee-jerk reaction.
I think that's a really nice way of framing it, that it's about a consciousness in our actions. So let's take some examples. You know, I had a student and he was doing a placement in an elementary school, and it was a young person that had said, "I love you." And he said, "I love you too, buddy." And he was torn up about it, that he had overstepped his boundaries, that his placement was going to be in jeopardy, that he had ruined this child because he had said this. When is it okay to say, "I love you, buddy"? And when is it not? And how do we make those judgments?
If there was a book that kind of told us all the situations that could come up with working with children and youth and how to respond, that would be wonderful. But unfortunately, a lot of it is using critical thinking. So some things that I think need to be taken into consideration. You have to have an understanding of where the child or youth is coming from. Are they coming from a disruptive background where there perhaps is a history of abuse, of abandonment, of individuals making promises, adults making promises and not keeping them? The treatment setting is going to help us define where we want to start off with our boundaries. So saying to a young person in the prevention program that I worked in, "I love you, buddy," that would have been something that was very much within the norm of the agency in being a motivator to kids and helping them to move forward by knowing that there was someone in their corner. However, the psychiatric hospital where I worked, that would be something that would be very taboo because individuals are at a high crisis state and things are very jumbled and confused and what they're trying to do is just become stabilized. So things could be misunderstood and misconstrued.
I think that's a great separation. I often talk about the role of love in driving the work that we do and our sense of compassion. I use the framework of love as a verb, as an action. We love the people we work with, and that's about helping them realize and supporting them and understanding how the person we are working with is going to interpret that. I think really helps me frame that idea of when we say that.
I think also, we need to, Dr. Tom Garfat, who is a pioneer in our field, wrote an editorial where he was challenging workers to say, have we gotten so caught up in the liability that we are not doing what's helpful for kids? For example, putting our arm around them and giving them a hug. Again, I think that's where the critical thinking comes in knowing your client, knowing your client's background, knowing the agency setting and the parameters within the agency, and then making a decision. So to go back to your student that was upset over saying, "Love you, buddy," I remember the first time a teen in residential treatment told me that they loved me, I was in stumbling over my words. What I tended typically was kids that I had established a relationship with. And after that first initial shock of, oh my goodness, what do I say? What I came up with is to give them a half a hug by putting my arm around them if we were walking and they told me that they loved me, and saying, "You just have really good taste." And then we would both laugh, and then we would move on. Sometimes if we make a bigger deal out of it, it becomes a bigger deal.
That's an important concept around making a bigger deal out of these things. A great example of that, I think, becomes the gift. People giving us the gift. And I know of situations where, you know, it becomes this huge process and the person's brought in and discussed, and their, you know, the primary worker is there and the person they give the gift to is there, and there's this whole debriefing around boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. I know situations where people are like, thanks, and they accept the gift. Understanding that context is really important. How do we have those conversations about boundaries in a way that it's going to help build the relationship?
This sounds so simplistic, but really just talking about it. I think what happens, at least from my experience, when I first started out working in residential treatment, I did not have the formal education. I had an associate's degree. I had worked with young children for many, many years, and I was told after I had been there for a while that the reason that they hired me is they were desperate. They had state licensing coming in, and they had positions to fill, and they said that they liked my energy, and they thought that they could mold me, and they would give me a try. So what I really learned was on the job. And from the get-go, the word boundaries was tossed around, and it almost became a negative concept when it was brought up. It's because somebody had crossed that line. But as a new worker, I was never quite sure what that line would be. And so it was, well, this is the rule, and we just follow this rule without that critical thinking piece. So part of it is being able to understand the terminology, to have the discussions before they become a crisis where somebody has crossed the line, and have it more of just a natural part of agency culture.
This idea of boundaries as rules, I think, is one that's quite prevalent in our field. And rather than thinking them as my first question alluded to, rather than thinking of them as opportunities for relationships, as, you know, here's my space, here's your space, where is that space that the two of us come together, and how do we build relationship in that mutual space? Boundaries, I think, are constructed or very much seen as this is what's prohibited rather than this is what's allowed.
Right. And I think from an organizational standpoint, my colleague and I conducted an exploratory study where we talked to administrators and we talked with youth workers about boundaries. And it was very interesting. Youth workers said that they did not receive any formal training regarding boundaries in their agency. But the administrators said, well, there was nothing specific. So there wasn't like an in-service specifically on boundaries, but that boundaries were covered in a variety of areas, supervision and in-service meetings, team meetings. So part of it makes me wonder, are we not being clear enough with the definitions and kind of our agency stance as to how we want to approach different things, like gift giving.
And how do we open that up on an agency level? How do we have that discussion so it's clearer for those of us working in the agency, and it's explicit, and those of us running agencies know that the staff are getting that training?
I think there are a variety of ways. Typically, in my experience, agencies that have done, say, physical holding or physical restraint have trainings yearly. There's training yearly on self-administered medication, on fire safety. Well, why wouldn't we have something a yearly or twice a year in service talking about boundaries? I think there are lots of clinical staff, especially in inpatient settings. Why not have a mentoring relationship between youth workers and clinicians? Without it being an us versus them, it can be us coming together. They have a little bit more specialized knowledge, so they may be able to help youth workers to think about things differently. I think the other is training on documentation. Training on documentation and also creating an atmosphere where it's okay to talk about boundary situations, and it's okay to say, I told a kid I loved them, and now I'm freaking out about it. Rather than be something that people have to fear being punished, let's have an open dialogue.
Are you seeing agencies coming at it from a punitive place?
I would say the agency settings that I worked in and that I was involved with, oftentimes the discussions about boundary crossings typically happen after it has been crossed, and then it becomes a big deal. So, for example, I can remember we had a new worker that came in and had primary youth working with. Well, the youth was celebrating their 16th birthday, and there was not a lot of family involvement. And this teen had been working really, really hard. So the worker brought in a bouquet of flowers to say happy birthday. Well, this went against agency norms. This became a huge deal. So not only was it, oh my gosh, this crossing, this boundary crossing has taken place. Now it's, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to make the teen give the flowers back, which again escalates it into something that it doesn't need to be? Clearly, there had not been communication. This worker was not trying to overstep. This worker was just trying to say, hey, 16th birthday is a demarcation in our life, and this youth didn't have anybody to celebrate it with.
Prime beautiful example, or distressing, not beautiful perhaps, is the wrong word. It's a very illustrative example of what happens when workers do not know the culture that they're working in. If someone is beginning a new job, if someone's starting a new setting, so for example, I was talking to a young person on the weekend, he's just started a new job, and he doesn't come from any formal training. And I think that's part of the reason they hired him, right? He comes from within, you might say. Right. And he's doing outreach, and it's a small agency. How does he go about asking for that training, that support, and asking for guidelines around the agency?
The first piece comes from within. And recognizing the fact that talking about this and talking about boundaries and asking questions is a positive, not a negative. It means that the worker has self-awareness. The worker is questioning their behavior, their interaction, and how it's going to impact the young person, and that can only be viewed as positive. So that would be the first thing that I would say to a new worker. I would say talking to other youth workers and watching and observing, seeing how they handle things. Hopefully, there will be a supervisor that if there are questions and boundary situations that come up, that the individual will feel comfortable seeking guidance from the worker, or the supervisor, excuse me. I think another is, again, in the documentation, and typically agencies will spend time talking about what should be documented, what should not be documented. What I always say is when it comes to boundary challenges, you want to make sure that you document, because otherwise the situations can become misconstrued, misunderstood, and it also makes it easy for secrets to kind of be kept. When we document, we are saying, as a professional, this is what we faced, this is how we handled it. What I used to say when I was supervising youth workers, and this was actually said to me when I was first started, if you can explain your rationale to me and tell me how you arrived at that, then I'm going to back you up. There might be a better solution for next time, and we'll talk about that. But if you're making a knee-jerk reaction, that's not going to fly. But if you can tell me what you were thinking of that led you to this decision, then I will back you up on that.
That's a great guiding principle for anybody. What is the rationale for this? And am I willing to share that rationale? Going back to your idea of secrets, I think that's a really powerful indicator. I mean, you've written about this elsewhere. I've crossed something here. If I want to keep this a secret as a practitioner, then I've crossed a line.
Absolutely. Because if we have to keep a secret, which is always going to come out, in my experience, I have seen workers that have left before they've been fired or have been fired because they have kept secrets. And that is something, particularly in inpatient settings, that is something that we're working with clients with, is to not keep secrets. And many times secrets are a contributing factor as to what led them into the inpatient setting. So part of it is, if you as a professional are going to make a decision, then you need to be able to stand behind your decision. And by that, it's exactly what we were saying, be able to document it, be able to say, this is what I was thinking at this moment, and then question it. I don't know if I made the right call, and I need some guidance on this if it comes up again.
And having that workplace that allows that, and having the confidence to bring up those questions, and creating that space for the dialogue, I think that's a really crucial aspect of our growth. I'd like to switch it a little bit. Now, we've been talking about one-on-one. We've been talking about inpatient and outreach. A few podcasts ago, I spoke with someone from an organization called Ultimate Youth Worker in Australia, and they do a lot of work with young people online. And we're seeing more and more and more of that. Online counseling, texting between young people and workers, Facebook pages for young people and workers. You know, I make a joke now that if you're not in the virtual realm, you're not an effective youth worker.
Absolutely.
but it smashes all these ideas of
personal space.
Personal space. Absolutely. How do we negotiate boundaries in this current realm?
Right. Well, I suppose some people who will be listening to this will be rolling their eyes when they hear me say that I'm really, I think, kind of old school. In the sense that, I mean, I have a Facebook page, but my Facebook page is for my family and friends. Now, I don't post anything on there that I wouldn't tell somebody standing behind me in the grocery store line. But there seems something untoward about perhaps having my students that I am grading, my students that I, again, have power over, being entangled in my personal life and knowing personal things. And also me being entangled in their personal life and knowing certain things. So I guess what I would question and what I would caution child and youth care workers to think about is the liability. So for example, if you have a youth that is involved with gangs and something comes up and it's a Friday night and it's 2 a.m. and this kid texts you and says, I'm in a bad situation, well, what are you going to do? You're not officially on the job, but yet you have this professional relationship with this young person, and this young person is reaching out to you. So let's just say that you go and you respond, and something happens where you are with the youth and the youth gets hurt. Well, what's the liability going to be for the agency? What's the liability going to be for the worker? What's the protection going to be for the worker that they were working and responding outside of work-related hours?
Yeah, it's a great point. So do we not community? I mean, that, you know, if we understand that a whole section of life, I mean, you know, the most obvious example would be bullying online. If we're not present online, we're not going to be aware of what's happening in the lives of the young people we work with. How do we negotiate that space?
I think having the discussions up front before, if that is a way to communicate. And this goes back to something that we were talking about earlier when you said, well, you know, how do we start this conversation? For my dissertation, I wanted to know just that. I knew from a professional standpoint what the do's and don'ts were, but I wanted to hear it from teens. What did they think about boundaries? What did they think was a boundary crossing? And so I interviewed them. And so part of it is having these discussions up front to say, okay, we need to kind of set some parameters here for both you and me. So if I, as the worker, am at a dinner party, then if you say you had a bad day and you need to talk to me and it's 10 o'clock at night, well, I may not respond because I'm at a dinner party. But maybe there is a parameter. If you tell me you've had a bad day and you want to talk, but it's not an emergency, maybe I could send you a text message back and say, okay, here's when I'm free to talk. But negotiating those things up front so it doesn't take the worker off guard, because if you have access to somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by virtue of technology, then you kind of expect a response back right away.
Yes, absolutely. There's something that I've long struggled with. When we talk to young people, they'll say, well, the most effective youth worker I know was the one who went outside, who was there, who picked up my phone at 2 a.m. when I was in a really bad spot, and I, you know, only called them twice, but that may have saved my life. And it's those workers that young people say are the ones that have had such a tremendous impact on me. Now, I also certainly met young people who, you know, I said, well, why don't you talk to your primary worker about this? And they come back and say, oh, well, we're more like friends than, you know, I can't really talk to her about this stuff. And so I understand that side of it also, certainly. But we do see that from young people who say, it's the worker who went beyond, and I consistently hear that from young people. If our job is to create relationship, is that part of our relationship to go beyond?
And I think that's an excellent question. I guess how I would respond is that all relationships have parameters. And given the relationship, the parameters may be very different. I think that kids, in my experience, children, youth, what they want is someone to be genuine and someone to be fair and be upfront and not speak out of both sides of their mouth. And so I think being open and honest about what you can and can't do versus giving false hope is fair to the young person, and in the long run, they will appreciate it. I can remember when I was leaving residential to move out of state to start my doctoral work, and there was an adolescent boy. I was the supervisor of a sexual offending unit, and one of the adolescent boys had taken a liking to me in the sense that we worked very well together. He didn't really have a motherly figure, and I think in his mind, I kind of played that role. So his therapist had approached me saying, you know, could you spend some one-on-one time with him because he's really having a hard time with you leaving? And I said, of course, absolutely. So we, and this was very hard for me, very, very hard to do, but I made this decision because it was in the best interest long term, I think, for him. He had said to me, well, will you keep in touch with me when you leave? And I said, you have had a lot of people in your life disappoint you, and I don't want to be one of those people. You have touched a special place in my heart, and I hope that I have touched a special place in your heart, but I don't want to make promises to you that I may not be able to keep. I don't know, since I've never been in a doctoral program, I don't know the time requirements on me. What I can promise you I can do is when I get there, I will send a note letting you know that I'm there, I'm settled, et cetera, et cetera. And we talked about it, and we talked about how hard that would be for both of us to kind of have to terminate, but how, given what had gone on earlier in his life, that he could appreciate that. The other thing that I think needs to be considered is worker burnout. If you are always on the clock and are always being plugged to help by technology and having access, how long are you going to do that before you say enough is enough? And then how fair is that going to be to the young person?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really excellent point. I so appreciate how you framed the idea of false hope, particularly with that young fellow you were just talking about now, and how that really demonstrated open and honest communication. As we move to a close, this idea of being genuine and being fair and recognizing that we are going to be ineffective if we're burnt out, if we can't communicate, if we can't even go online to share stories with our family on Facebook because we're worried that the people we work with are going to see it, and we're, you know, then we completely isolate ourselves. And I think that that's a really important way for us to think about this. Is there anything else that you think that needs to be said that we've missed in this conversation before we wrap it up?
I think the one big area that we have to keep in mind is culture and how boundaries may be different with some cultural groups. Personal space, hugging, gift giving, that is something that we need to take into consideration within our critical thinking as to whether we are going to put distance in the relationship or whether or not that is going to help to bridge the relationship. And again, I go back to Dr. Riemer, who in his book, Tangled Relationships, gives a wonderful example about home visits. And in some agencies, they may say, if you have to go to a youth or young person's home, you are not to break bread with the family. Well, in many cultural groups, food is a way of joining. And if you go in and a meal has been prepared or dessert has been prepared and you refuse that, that could put a damper between you and the relationship with this family. And so being able to, again, think these things through prior to and then standing by your decision. So if the agency has a policy that you don't do this and you feel it's in the best interest of the professional relationship of your work with that family, that young person, then you may have to go against agency policy. But then you need to be able to stand by it and to talk about the decision that you made and why you made that decision.
That's an excellent point. There's a whole other discussion around boundaries and relationship within different cultures. And thank you for bringing it up, because it's a crucial conversation. And I'll put that on my list of conversations to have.
Wonderful.
It's a good one, definitely. Pam, I want to thank you so much for having this conversation. I've been wanting to do a podcast around boundaries since I started, actually. I haven't found the right person, and I think you are exactly the right person to have had this conversation with. So I really, really appreciate you taking the time and raising these questions and pushing me to think about what it means in my life, and hopefully for all the people who are listening to the podcast as well. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure, and it's a wonderful topic that we should all just keep on talking about.
Indeed. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.